Welcome to another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. She might not have had any formal culinary training, but my guest today is a chef, as well as an entrepreneur and small business owner. As an undergraduate at Tufts, Valerie Schulock studied biopsychology with a specialty in nutrition and behavior. Later, while working on her master's in management of human services at Brandeis, she took the advice of the head of the program and left school to pursue the business plan she came up with as an assignment for class. In 1987, she launched Basil Tree. In a cramped kitchen in Somerville, Mass., Val, along with a couple of friends, created unique pasta salads for local cafes and takeout markets. That spawned a catering business that became so successful, they decided to eliminate the wholesale aspect. Today, Val, the sole owner, has more than 30 employees. Her friends still work closely with her as kitchen manager and head chef. In addition to providing an extensive menu of delicious food, from bacon breakfast burritos to vegetable quiche cups to spanakopita, Basil Tree and Catering is a business with a conscience. It works closely with Boston's charitable organizations and shelters, donating at least 10% of its profits every year. As a certified sustainable business leader, Val and company recycle and compost more than 90% of the waste and are only too happy to pick up clients' caterware for reuse. So Val, hi, welcome and thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Let me just say at the outset that all of a sudden it seems that I've developed some allergies. So forgive me if it sounds a little gravelly. So bear with me. Anyway, Val, did you always like to cook? And by the way, were you any good?
Well, you know, that would be for other people to determine if I was good, but I actually have liked to cook. I remember back in middle school when my mom was working, I would make both of our lunches. And sometimes if she'd have people over for dinner, I would create dessert. So it was something I think that I always enjoyed feeding people. It's the pleasure I get from making them happy more than just the art of the cooking.
So you could kind of say it was a hobby as opposed to a calling?
Yes, I think it was something that was, you know, a pleasurable activity. And it was a way that I connected with people. Like in college, it was a way to have people over and create a meal for them. My roommate and I, Elisa, would take food from the cafeteria and bring it home and create a meal. Like I remember making broccoli quiche out of the broccoli from the salad bar and the eggs from the breakfast area and have people over for a meal. So it was really a way to connect with people and to have a social engagement.
So wait a second, you stole food from the cafeteria?
Well, yeah, we tried not to use the word steal, but yes, that was the fact there.
Well, you bring up college because as I mentioned in my intro, you majored in, or you studied biopsychology. What the heck is that?
Well, biopsychology is really the areas where the biology impacts behavior. So, you know, it's a big area of research. And at the time it was, you know, it was a new field. And in fact, it has become a specific major at Tufts. At the time, I had to combine two majors to make it into a major. But it's really, you know, understanding how the body impacts the emotions and how we behave.
You mean as in too much sugar, that kind of thing?
Well, with the specialty in nutrition, yes, that was the case. I was studying with Professor Robin Kanarak, who I'm actually still friends with. And one of the things she was doing at the time, if I recall correctly, was feeding Oreos to mice and see how that affected their behavior.
And how did that affect their behavior?
Well, gosh, she would probably be able to answer that question better than I could, but probably not in their best
in the most positive way. So what did you think you were going to do with that when you got out of school?
I thought my interest was going into the nonprofit world. I had interest in doing something with women's health and nutrition. I sort of envisioned myself in a nonprofit health setting, some kind of management in a women's health center, something of that nature.
So then you move on to get a master's in management of human services. And as I said again in the intro, that under the advice of the program head, you left school to pursue a business plan that you created as a class assignment. So talk to me about what that plan was. And that's got to be a little unorthodox for somebody to saying, hey, don't bother staying here. Go out. Do it.
Yeah, that's true. So the head of the master's program at that time, his name was Jerry Bush, and he actually came from an industry background. So I think he understood people wanting to work in private industry. There was a change in career for him. So I think that he was open-minded and he realized that I had a passion for this. He, you know, basically the business plan specifically was for a gourmet natural takeout store, which is what I thought I wanted. But I shifted gears when I had trouble finding a storefront that I thought would be a good match for me and affordable. But I think he saw the passion in me and realized that there was something that I should pursue and give it a try and just get out there and go for it.
So you were going to combine your biopsychology with your love for cooking and trying to embark on a new direction.
Yes, that's true. But I think I also was trying to bring my interest in nutrition to the business as well. I wanted to try and have a food business that could serve tasty but healthy food. And in those days, that was less common and less available to find whole grains in baked goods or to find foods that were being taken into account, the salt level and the fat level and things like that. So I was trying to bring my interest into the business and combine them in that nature.
So tell me about the formation of Basil Tree and how did you come to that name?
Oh, that's a funny question. So I did a survey at the time. I was actually, when I was coming up with the name, I was still working at the Heller School as a research assistant. So I kind of took my research background to heart in the way I created my business and that I developed a survey and I gave it out to, say, 100 people of friends and family of top 10 names of that we had come up with. And then I had people reply to that and they're ranking them from 1 to 10. And I still have that handwritten spreadsheet because in those days, Excel wasn't so much of a thing. So I had a handwritten spreadsheet where I calculated everything and the top choice was Basil Tree. And so I went with it.
Take us through the birth of Basil Tree.
When I was making the choice to leave the master's program, I had not finished it at that time. I left my job and stepped down from the master's program. I did come back to it 8 years later, but I did step down at that time. I decided I needed more experience in the food business because, in fact, I had worked in college at a couple of food businesses and I hadn't worked at it, you know, since college. So I stepped down from that and got experience in the food business in a more managerial level and as a cook. And while I was as a cook, I met my first two employees, Irene and Carlos, who started working for me. We were all working together and we shifted to the Basil Tree. I basically had 2 weeks to get my business started, which was a rather rapid start to a business. But I was working at a place and I had this woman that I knew and she was starting a job at another place. And she said, I can use you as our food provider if you can get your business started in 2 weeks. Found a place where I could rent that was already an operating food business. So I was sharing a kitchen with another bakery. And within 2 weeks, we were up and running. I don't know if we quite had everything in place in 2 weeks, but we had a place to work. And I hired the two people that I was working with at my previous job, and we were ready to produce food for this other company.
That didn't at all overwhelm you, or you didn't go home and say, what in God's name have I done? How am I going to pull this off in 2 weeks?
Well, you know, it's funny because people now, when I look back on it, and I was 25 at the time.
And so you were young and stupid.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when you're young and stupid, you don't realize that things are overwhelming. Although I do have to say, around that time, I think I had to go to the doctor because I was having a rapid heartbeat.
Oh, really?
So it may have been coming out in ways that I wasn't aware. So I think the stress level was probably there, but that didn't stop me. I'm not a huge risk taker. But I do things in a very measured way. So the way I was starting this business wasn't a huge risk because I was renting from somebody else. I didn't have to invest a huge amount of money. I didn't have to get funding. So it didn't feel as scary as when I hear about people that are starting companies where they're getting millions of dollars and taking out loans and things like that sound much more intimidating to me than the small steps that I took.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Valerie Shulock, who is a chef, entrepreneur, and owner of the catering company Basil Tree. So somehow you managed to get your stuff together, know how much food to order, what to make, and the three of you pull off this first job because you're still in business. It worked.
Yes, for sure. It did work. And It was a very exciting time. We worked hard, and you know, at that time we were cooking all day, and then at the end of the day I would deliver the food. So, you know, there's a satisfaction in that production, and you can see the end results of what you've done. You know, that's one of the things I love about cooking and food is, you know, you work hard, but at the end there's this product that you can see, you can smell, people can enjoy. So there was a lot of satisfaction from that. I was exhausted. I remember often falling asleep if I was having my teeth cleaned once, and I think I fell asleep at that time. So, you know, certainly there's a physical exhaustion, but a lot of satisfaction.
But how long did it take you to go from one client to multiple clients?
We actually had that client was 2 years of our beginning of our business. So that was a long time, and they were a significant company. And then we decided to branch out. So we took that concept, which was providing food for a store or cafe that didn't have their own kitchen facilities. And we started to sell to other restaurants, cafes, small businesses that didn't necessarily have a way of making homemade items or, you know, produced items. So it might be a coffee shop that wanted to add on a pasta salad or something of that nature. So we expanded the business in that nature to do a wholesale business. And then from there, we went to catering. So it started as a wholesale business.
And where were you based?
This was in Somerville, Mass. We actually, the space that I found that I shared with the baker at first, she then, I think 8 years later, left, and I took over the whole space. And then we took over the space next door, and then the space next door of that one. So we ended up, you know, sort of growing organically within the place that we were. And we stayed in that same location for 25 years.
Wow. I happen to have in front of me the Basil Tree corporate catering menu. This may seem almost like such a juvenile question, but how did you know what you wanted to make and serve? How did you come up with your menu?
You know, the way I tend to work, and I see this as the method that I am creative, and it's different than like coming up with something from scratch, is that I take ideas from what I see around me. I would go to other takeout stores, other catering companies, use their ideas, but not, you know, not steal them like I was kind of stealing the food from the cafeteria, but use them and shift them to what I think would be an even better idea. So, you know, taking a pasta salad concept or a sandwich concept and adding something new to it or tweaking it in a way that would appeal to the customers. So, you know, that's how we often came up with our menu ideas. But one of the challenges with menus is that customers often want new ideas, but they get very unhappy when you take something off your menu. Huh. So people don't like to lose what they have, but they always want something new and different. So that's been really one of our challenges, which is how to not have this menu grow and grow and grow. We've tried to scale it back, and every time we add something new, we take something off. But, you know, we don't like to make people unhappy, but sometimes that is the nature of the beast. And what we started with actually when we got into the catering field are the local universities.
And, well, you have a ton of those, don't you?
Yes. Being based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there's no lack of fabulous universities. And one thing I like to say is Harvard and MIT are not going to go out of business. So we don't have to worry about them paying their bills. So the universities and the hospitals in Boston are a big source of our business, high tech businesses as well. I think that's really our niche are those areas. We do, you know, other corporate kind of businesses, but I would say the universities, hospitals, and the high tech arena are our biggest customers.
Too bad you can't provide the food for all of their cafeterias.
Yeah, that's true. Although, you know, there is probably something to be said for staying smaller in terms of trying to provide the quality and the customer service that we do provide. I'm not sure if we were to expand to the level of that level, we could continue, you know, what we do well.
So you don't really have to advertise, do you? A lot of this is word of mouth.
Well, yeah, we don't do any print advertising at this point. We used to, but what we do, and you know, this is a very lovely way to get new customers, is we bring them free food. So it kind of goes along with what I've always liked to do in my life, which is to feed people. And, you know, they're always a little skeptical at first when we say, can we bring you a free lunch? And they're, you know, like, what's the catch here? And we say, not a catch, just try our food and see if you like it. And that's how we do our marketing.
Do you still provide food to markets as opposed to catering a specific event for a company?
No, we do no longer do that. We basically made a choice because I feel like it's hard to do a lot of different kinds of businesses. And at that point, we scaled back on the types of businesses we had. So we actually cut out the wholesale piece of our business. And over time, we've cut out actually other pieces of our business because, you know, one of my mottos is focus, focus, focus. So we did have a retail store at one point, which we closed. We did full service catering for weddings and bar mitzvahs and things of that nature. We ended that because really our strength is in the drop off catering. And, you know, any advice I usually give to small businesses is figure out what you do well and do that.
Talk now about all of your charitable work. How did that come to be, and explain what Basil Tree does?
Yeah, our charitable work is a big part of what we do. You know, I did get into this business initially thinking I was going to be in the nonprofit world, as we have talked about. And, you know, the way I try and make a difference in the world at this point is through my business. And we're in a position where we can give back to the community. And one of the big areas that we've gotten involved with is trying to be more sustainable in our own work and in the community. I personally am on the board of directors of an organization called the Sustainable Business Network. And that's an organization that tries to help businesses create economies that are local, green, and fair. And we've really taken that to heart within our own business and try to do whatever we can do to be more green and local and fair. So all three of those things. So in terms of the green piece, we do not Greenpeace as such, but Greenpeace. Recycling and compost, as you had mentioned, over 90% of our waste. And then we have this program where we call our Basil Bin program, where we send out a bin with our orders and all the platters and trays and lids. If you've seen any, you know, typical catering, drop-off catering, there's lots of waste. And it's a challenge in this field because the nature of drop-off catering involves a lot of stuff. So we try and pick that up as much as possible, and we can sterilize it and reuse it rather than just recycle or compost. We're actually reusing something. So that's, you know, where we do make a difference in the green piece. We try to source as many ingredients locally as possible. That is a challenge, especially in New England. And then in terms of fair, that's really trying to model behavior in our own business of treating people with respect, trying to pay them fairly, adding benefits when we can and when we can afford it, which is unusual in the food business. You know, there's typically people don't have any benefits. They don't have regular schedules.
Right.
In our particular business, our labor costs are by far higher than the typical percentages in the restaurant business. But we take a lot of pride in that, in, you know, trying to make a difference where we can, because, you know, the food business is a tough business.
I would assume that you use no styrofoam.
For sure, no styrofoam. That is correct. We use all of our paper goods that we use are made from renewable resources. So, for example, the plates are made from waste from sugarcane or from wheat production. So it's products that would just be waste. It's not even, you know, recycled materials, they would have been thrown away. So that's very exciting. We actually purchase some of those paper goods from a company that is a nonprofit company that sells their paper goods as a way to support their nonprofit work. So we really try and, you know, make a difference in the small things like that. You know, we're still in a business that has a lot of waste, but those little details can make a big difference.
A few months back, I interviewed a woman named Dana Gunders, who is a staff scientist with the National Resources Defense Council, talking a lot about expiration dates and wasted food. Some people said they thought that this figure was low. I didn't think so. But she said that an average family of four wastes about $120 a month in food. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, we're in a very lucky situation in that when we make food, we're making it specifically for an event. It's not like unlike a restaurant where you have to have food on hand waiting for customers to show up. So we order our products and we create our food based on an event that's needed. So, you know, luckily there's not a lot of wasted products on hand for us. And actually that's very satisfying. In terms of the end result at the customer, they, you know, we just drop off our products. So it's up to them. But honestly, when you're delivering to places like MIT, you know, and there's a lot of students around, there doesn't tend to be a lot of wasted food.
Right, right. I think the thing that struck me is going to a wedding, especially a Saturday night wedding, and there are all these hors d'oeuvres and you're kind of filling up on the hors d'oeuvres. And then all of a sudden it's 11 o'clock and dinner is being served. And I just have no appetite and no interest. And more than once, I've asked the server, can my dinner be donated to an organization? And the answer is a very fast and quick no.
Yeah, it's one of the challenges, actually. We are able to donate. We have some shelters in the area that we do donate when we've had, say, a canceled catering job. But once the food is out and there's a lot of restrictions around health and sanitation,
of course,
food has been sitting out for any period of time or unrefrigerated, not at the proper heating temperatures. So, you know, for good reason, there's a lot of regulations around that. But the good thing for us is if we've had, like I said, a catering event that's been canceled and the food has been in a safe setting, we can bring that to shelters. And we have a few shelters that we have a relationship with.
If you're just joining us, my guest today is Valerie Shulock, who is a chef, entrepreneur, and owner of the catering company Basil Tree. Tell me what's in the future for Basil Tree. Is there any kind of expanding, or are you just very happy with where your business is?
Well, you know, if the past is any predictor of the future, I expect that we're going to still be doing what we've been doing for 28 years, which is slow growth. I mean, I really enjoy change and growth because I think it gives us new challenges and we like to keep the business fresh and something new. And we've had changes over the years. Like this year, we just hired an HR coordinator for the first time to really put more benefits in place for the employees. Mm. So things change slowly, but they do change and that keeps things interesting. There's something new every day to go to work, you know, and enjoy a new challenge.
So what's it like to be the sole owner of a company that is a successful and also just provides such a wonderful public service?
Oh, well, thank you for the compliment. I love it. I mean, I love having my own business. One of the things I really enjoy about it is how varied the work is. I enjoy the creativity of, say, developing the menu design, taking the photographs. Actually, my daughter is the photographer for the menu. And so I consult on that basis. But then there's the nitty gritty of if a customer double pays an invoice, then how do you handle that? And how do you give that credit? And, you know, there's little challenges and you have to take joy in trying to make things more efficient and more effective and giving better customer service. And it's all those pieces put together that I love. I don't like to sit at my desk for more than, say, 15 minutes at a time. And luckily, there's plenty of distractions in the kitchen to help me pop up and go have something to taste or to try a new recipe and have something new every day.
You don't feel at all overwhelmed, even though I know you've been doing this for so long, being the chief cook and bottle washer?
Well, sometimes it can be overwhelming. And I've more recently reached out to other business owners when I had two kids and two stepkids. I basically would go to work and come home. And now that I have the luxury of all the kids are off, you know, as adults, that I can connect with other business owners. And I think that's very important to have that network and to have some support because there's other people that are going through the same thing that you are. And as an owner, you don't really have any peers. So I think there is a satisfaction in making those connections and networking. And that's both good for my business and good for me.
I can't imagine, though, as the children were growing up, how'd you juggle those balls in the air?
Yeah, sometimes I wonder that myself, actually, and how we got things done and had a dog and did kitchen renovations. And now I can't seem to get any of those things done.
Yeah, can't blame the kids and the dog anymore, can you?
Yeah, no. Well, actually, we have two dogs now. But one of the things that really did work for me is going into the corporate and university world rather than private catering, because it is very more defined hours. But I always did have employees that I could trust and could take care of things in my absence. And that's been really important, is to have a staff that I trusted. And it's a wonderful thing. I, you know, still have that to this day. I, you know, have days where I don't go to work or I have other projects and I don't have to worry that things are going to carry on without me.
Well, clearly it's a mutual admiration society. You do for them and they do for you. So it's a labor of love, perhaps on both sides.
Yeah. And I think that that's true. And that's something that you can make happen in a small business and you can make those connections with people and, you know, they can feel part of it. They can feel like they make a contribution and they do. So it does work for all of us.
So why doesn't it work for more people? Why is it that you can count on one hand how many people are doing what you're doing?
Well, I think that part of the thing about having a small business is you have to enjoy the act of running a business. I think a lot of people get into a business because they love the product or the art. For example, in food, you know, maybe they're fabulous chefs or they're, you know, a great artist and they want to open a studio, but they don't actually enjoy the process of running a business. And for me, I came into it from the background of actually wanting to run an organization. And I had this love of cooking, but that wasn't really where I came to it. I didn't come from cooking school or cooking background.
In fact,
I never watched a cooking show. You know, so it really came from wanting to run an organization. And I think that that's a big difference for you know, a lot of people.
I want to go back to the basil tree, and I want you to talk about some of your specialties. What are you known for?
Oh, yeah. So one of the things that has been on our menu, I think from day one, that we will never get rid of is our pad thai salad. It's kind of a takeoff on the traditional pad thai that you would get in a restaurant. So people love it because pad thai is spicy and it's sweet and it's got, you know, some healthy ingredients. And so we have morphed that into a salad of sorts. So that one is, you know, one time we tried to count the pounds of pad thai that we've probably made, but we've lost track. The other thing that was very popular that was inspired by an employee of mine, and then we, you know, we worked on the recipe we call Southwest Sweet Potato Salad, which has been great, you know, in recent years because it's gluten-free and vegan and it fits a lot of food categories. And, you know, you can't go wrong with sweet potatoes. So that's another one of our classics. We have a few sandwiches that are signature sandwiches. One was called a Vermonter that was also inspired by an employee who was from Vermont. And that's got local Vermont cheddar cheese and apples and fresh roasted turkey, which we also get from a local roastery in Vermont. So that one.
Getting hungry. I really am getting hungry. I have to tell you that it's just so funny that you brought up the vegetarian pad thai salad, because as I was leafing through the menu, honest to God, that's the first thing that jumped out at me. I thought I could really, really enjoy a pad thai salad.
Well, we can ship to New York just for you. But, you know, typically we don't distribute out of states.
Tell me how you incorporated breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Did you expect to do that?
Well, I think things have grown over time. You know, I'm not sure that I expected to do any of this when I first started.
I guess not.
But since we supply for the corporate and university world, and a lot of actually in the hospitals, especially a lot of the meetings these days are early AM meetings. The, you know, the docs get in there and need to have their breakfast meetings, and then they're on their, you know, rounds and whatnot. So breakfast is actually a big seller for us. We make everything from scratch, which is unusual compared to other establishments.
What do you mean by that? That you make everything from scratch? Give me an example.
Well, like our muffins, for example, most places either buy muffin batter or muffin mix, or they buy pre-made muffins. We do everything from scratch so that we can incorporate some whole grains into our muffins. We get our blueberries directly from a farm in Maine. So there's, you know, things that like that that we wouldn't be able to get if we were buying anything pre-made.
I see. And I also see in your menu that you provide for people on special diets. I mean, you really cover all the bases, woman, don't you?
Well, I don't want to say all, but we do. Special diets is a specialty of ours, and people really enjoy the fact that we can provide vegan, gluten-free, vegetarian items, dairy-free. So we really try and appeal to a variety of diets. And that also, you know, circles back to my interest in nutrition.
And I also see on the menu that you provide chips and snacks. I mean, that's just great. Dried fruit and nut mix, basil trees, own mix, packaged in individual bags or in a serving bowl. You leave no stone unturned.
Yeah, well, we, like I said, you know, we try and think. First of all, I love to snack. I'm a person that doesn't go more than an hour without eating. So, you know, snacks are important. And when people are sitting in meetings all day, they need something healthful
to nosh on. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, guess what, Valerie? We've run out of time, but I've really enjoyed meeting, getting to know you and hearing all about Basil Tree. And I just have to say that I did see that you compiled a notebook of recipes that you really like, and you gave them to your friends and family. And the name of your notebook is To Stir With Love. That was, I just went nuts for that.
Yeah, that was something that I had promised to my kids when they turned 20 and 25 that I would do. And I've taken some recipes and created a book, and now I keep adding to it. And in fact, I think I'm the one that uses it more than anybody else.
Well, that's just the title is great. I understand millennials might not get the reference, but I thought it was really clever. Anyway, Valerie, thanks so much for sharing your life and your business and your passions with us. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the work that you do. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Valerie. Join us for another edition of Conversations with Creative Women. And if you know of a creative woman who you think should be interviewed, contact us at www.sandyclineshow.com.